Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
My personality was to blame.
What call is that?
I was not afraid to say what was on my mind.
Boomer Esiason.
Esiason, wide open is Brooks. Boomer just threw that football up like it was on a hanger.
Host of Boomer and Geo, mornings on WFAN.
Why don't you just announce it on WFAN?
1988 NFL MVP.
The Cincinnati Bengals AFC champion.
NFL All-Pro and four-time Pro Bowler.
Esiason, the talk of Cincinnati.
Our very own Monday afternoon quarterback.
Thanks for typing. I couldn't have said it any better, actually. It's a pretty good way of describing it.
Boomer Esiason with Danny Parkins on 670 The Score.
Absolutely love these opportunities to talk to Boomer on Mondays. Before we get to that, though, let's tell people this breaking news. The Bears have placed their safety, Eddie Jackson, on the reserve COVID-19 list. So once you're on that list, then you're within the protocol, and we'll have to see what happens. I saw that the Ravens did that same thing today with Mark Ingram and with Dobbins as well. It's amazing that happened.
They play Thursday night.
Well, the Bears and Eddie Jackson, he's kind of important. They need Eddie Jackson. So we will talk about that more. Probably Mark Grody going to join us in about 1 hour with tape and the latest from everything up at Halas Hall. In the meantime, right now, it's me, Matt Spiegel, and him, Ryan McGuffey, on the Parkins Show on 670 The Score. And we welcome in Boomer Esiason. This segment with Boomer is brought to you by HealthNetics Premium CBD, available at healthnetics.com. Boomer, what's up? How are you?
Hey, Matt and Ryan, I'm doing well. How are you guys today? I guess pretty good since you didn't lose yesterday.
we were talking about the joy of not having the Bears around. It's exactly right. Would they stay on bye if we ask them again? I mean, it's basically we don't get them until Sunday night, so it's basically like we get a whole nother NFL Sunday without them. But seriously, Boomer, everywhere you look is high quality quarterback play, just not with the Bears. Why is that for the last 60 years? Help us out on that.
If I had the answer for that, I'd be running the Bears. I could tell you that, because that's the $100 million question that they have. There's no question about that. But, you know, there's not all that high quality quarterback play being played around the NFL. I mean, there's about 10 guys that give you a consistent effort every week, and then there's about 6 guys that basically allow you to win every week. And those are the guys that, you know, that we saw last night. Derek Carr is starting to inch into that kind of stratosphere, the way that he's been playing under John Gruden. They're just not ready yet. They still have another year probably of building, and then maybe they'll be ready to overtake the Chiefs. But, you know, I just think that, you know, the Bears caught a break yesterday. Their entire division got swept. You know, I know that Matt Nagy's dealing with the COVID issues now, as every team in the league is, and they even have a bigger issue. And the bigger issue is who is going to be their starting quarterback when they line up Sunday night against the Packers. I don't know if injury is going to have anything to do with that, or whether or not, you know, they decide to go back to Mitch if he's healthy enough, just to gain a spark, just to get something going offensively, maybe just to extend a play, call a running play. I guess it all depends on how Mitch is feeling and how well his shoulder is healed.
Well, Boomer, I'm ready for that. We've talked about it several times with you, and last week you were pointed on it. Nick Foles doesn't look like he could play NFL quarterback right now. So why not? If they're both healthy and Matt Nagy's got his druthers, he's got his choice of either. Would you do Mitch this week?
I would. I mean, if everything's equal and they're healthy, then I would give the ball to Mitch just simply because at least I know that, you know, I can get an extended play. I may not get the most accurate throws, but I wasn't getting those from Nick either. You know, Nick was brought in because he was a guy who knew the system. He was a guy who was the Super Bowl MVP. He was a guy, you know, who was accurate and who was able to make quick decisions and read defense as well. Well, I'm not really sure what happened to that guy. Maybe he's a little bit gun shy right now. Maybe he's a little bit beat up. You know, I know we've been talking about the lack of a running game and the offensive line play for the last 2 years. And, you know, the quarterback has to make a lot of that go. You know, there are a lot of guys all around the league that play offensive line that get signed by other teams because it's a perceived failure in one city. And maybe that perceived failure is tied directly to the quarterback and how that quarterback plays football. You know, if he's playing for Kyle, or any of these guys are playing for Kyler Murray or Russell Wilson or Lamar Jackson or, you know, even Ben Roethlisberger or, and you know, I would say Philip Rivers and Aaron Rodgers are in that group. You know, they just make everybody around them better. And right now, the quarterback position is doing anything but that, you know, in Chicago. And that's the problem that Matt Nagy has. He can call the plays, they can design all the plays. But, man, if you don't have a guy that can pull the trigger and be accurate and be poised in the pocket and deal with all the blitzing and all the different things that we're confronted with at our position, then you got a problem. And I think they got a problem. So if you want to try to solve that problem, then you go back to a healthy Mitch Trubisky, assuming he is healthy, because I do think he brings the extra dimension of running with a football.
Well, Boomer, count me in the group that enjoyed my Bears list Saturday or Sunday for sure. Saturday, Sunday, and Monday for that matter with the Bears. So, and count me in the group that's had quarterback envy my entire life, dating back to when you were running the show for the Bengals and Jets. So when I'm watching the Saints and Falcons yesterday and Taysom Hill under center, at first I thought this is going to not work out well. But then at the end of the game, my only report is how in the hell – do the Saints have three quarterbacks that are better than any one of the Bears?
Well, I don't know about that about Jameis just yet, so just hang on about that. You know, Jameis likes to throw the ball to the other team, which is one of the reasons why he's not playing and he's only making $1 million after, you know, not seeing his rookie contract all the way through. You know, Taysom's been down there for a while, and he played quarterback like he plays his other position. I don't know if you saw any of the runs. I'm sure you saw some of the highlights. I mean, you know, he's a physical player. He's a grinder. I think Sean Payton was trying to make a point that, you know, look, we're paying this guy a lot of money. He thinks of himself as a quarterback one. So let's put him out there and let's see what he's got. And the good thing that he did yesterday is he did what he normally does, just did it out of the shotgun formation. So it's a wildcat for him when he's back there. The other good thing he did is he was accurate and didn't turn the football over. And then he took off and ran. You know, if I could design an offense to look a certain way for the Bears, it would have been that offense that they ran yesterday for the New Orleans Saints. And Mitch Trubisky would be that quarterback. You know, that's what he is as an athlete. That's the way he should look. Now, I wouldn't say that Taysom Hill looked all that comfortable at quarterback. You know, me watching him, I'm like, man, it looks like a running back trying to play quarterback. But, you know, he does have some quarterback skills. He can throw the ball. And like I said, he was really accurate. And I got to tell you, Sean Payton is a tremendous football coach. You know, he never or very rarely ever gets talked about as coach of the year. You know, and yesterday I was saying on the NFL Today, I know Mike Tomlin's done a great job. Kevin Stefanski's done a great job. You could say Matt LaFleur's done a good job. Well, let me just tell you something. Sean Payton's done a great job, and Sean Payton deserves a lot of credit. You know, he's 6-0 without Drew Brees over the last 2 years. And Teddy Bridgewater got a big contract out of Carolina Panthers because of it. So I think a lot of it has to do with the coach, the fact that Taysom Hill's been there for a while, and they put him in a good position, you know, and that kid can play. You know, he's not afraid to play on an NFL football field, and it certainly showed itself yesterday.
As we watch games with no Bears, a lot of times we end up looking at all the quarterbacks the Bears were choosing from in the offseason, theoretically. The aforementioned Bridgewater and Jameis, Cam Newton threw for 365 yesterday, even though they lost. And then Philip Rivers, that didn't even get much conversation in this town, and I feel like it should have gotten a hell of a lot more conversation in this town. I know he's never run an Andy Reid tree offense, you know, but yeah. He and Frank Reich, who has coached in that tree, he and Frank Reich are making magic. It's your former college roommate. Why are they making magic, Boomer, together?
Well, Frank's a great play designer, and he's also a great play caller. And, you know, he played the position for, 13 or 14 years in the NFL. I talked to Frank a lot during the season, just about different trends in a league, things to look for. You know, gives me a lot of heads up around the league, what's happening and things of that nature. He's extremely bright. And, you know, look, he had Jacoby Brissett last year, and he really likes Jacoby. And he wanted Jacoby to learn from somebody that knew Frank's system, knew how, you know, Frank was going to call plays. That's one of the reasons I think that they went after Philip Rivers, because Frank and Philip were together in San Diego, and Philip had some really good years under Frank out in San Diego. So that was really a decision, because it was either Nick Foles or Philip Rivers, because Frank did love Nick Foles and does love Nick Foles. I don't want to take anything away from it. He tried to get Nick Foles from Jacksonville, but I think Jacksonville just wanted to get him out of the division because they didn't want to reunite him with a coach. Now, I know that Nick's performance in Chicago makes a lot of people roll their eyes, but maybe under Frank, with Frank, it would have been different. I don't know. But all I do know is that Philip Rivers is really happy that he's in Indianapolis. And, you know, Frank's just a really good play designer. He knows how to call plays. Sometimes I think he gets overly aggressive. And if there's one knock that I would always have against him, like, Frank, why don't you just run the ball more? Why don't you just try to, you know, eat up some clock at the end of games as opposed to throwing it? And he's, you know, he's going to live and die by the sword. You know, he knows he wants to be aggressive. He goes into every game thinking that way. And he knows when he looks across the field and he sees Aaron Rodgers, he's going to ask his quarterback to win the game for him because he doesn't want to put the ball back in his hands. So I just think that that's a good marriage. That's a marriage that they knew each other. Much like if Nick Foles would have went to Indianapolis, I think Nick would have been somewhat successful too with Frank because of the way that he runs his offense.
I'm sure Philip Rivers took one look at the Bears offensive line and said, yeah, hard pass, which is another reason why he's in Indianapolis, because of that offensive line. And I wanted to ask
plus
you about
indoors. Plus indoors. Likes to play indoors. You know, I like that good weather out in San Diego when he was out there, and L.A. for that matter. But, you know, it takes a special kind of person to want to play in the Northeast, the Midwest, in these outdoor stadiums, especially when you get to December and January.
Fair point. I wanted to ask you about the Colts on a follow-up there. Do you feel like they're the team that nobody talks about? I mean, they're a short drive down I-65 from us, yet they just, like, Frank just keeps churning out win after win after win. And when you look amongst the elite teams in the NFL, the Colts are right there amongst the league leaders, yet no one talks about them. There's nothing really sexy. They don't have any sexy stars or star players, and they're not in prime time. Like, this Sunday, we've been talking about how we would love to trade this game for the Titans and Colts on Sunday night. But what is your feeling on the Colts? Because they seem to be that team that just does everything right, yet nobody talks about.
Well, Chris Ballard's done a great job there. Now, Chris Ballard hired Josh McDaniels to be their head coach. And when Josh backed out and left the coaching staff there, you know, then they reached out to Frank, because Frank was there. That's where he started his coaching tenure under Tony Dungy in Indianapolis. So he was coaching Peyton Manning way back when, and then was coaching wide receivers that year that they had the stuck for luck thing going on. And then they blew out that entire coaching staff, and in came Chuck Pagano and everybody else, and they had Andrew Luck as their quarterback. And they obviously won a lot of games with Andrew. And that's when Frank started jumping around the league a little bit. You know, I just think that they have a real synergy between Chris Ballard and Frank, the type of player that they want. It really was a shock that Andrew Luck did retire on them last year before the season started. And then they made a trade in the offseason this year, and they traded for DeForest Buckner, the defensive tackle, defensive end from San Francisco. And he was like the linchpin to this defense because they've been drafting really good on the defensive side. And Darius Leonard happens to be one of those non-sexy players that just shows up every week in the stat sheets, you know, 10, 12 tackles. He's all over the field. He's the heart and soul leader of that team, and you can see it. And then the other interesting thing that Frank told me this offseason, and everybody can take this for what they want, but I know the pressure that the football coaches are in, not only in college, but really in the NFL, and is the whole social justice George Floyd situation. And before Frank became a coach, he was a minister down in North Carolina for 10 years, and he had his own ministry, and he dealt with so many issues and so many family issues with so many families in that particular area of his life, that he was unbelievably well positioned and prepared for the onslaught of what took place after the George Floyd murder in Minneapolis. And he was one of the first coaches, if not the first coach, to open up Zoom calls to listen to player stories, to hear them out, because this is where he came from. And he told me before the season started, he goes, you know, Boomer, I don't know where the season's going to end. All I can tell you is that I've never had a team that I've ever been so close to and that I've ever had so close to each other. And I think that's going to bode us well, because we have a lot of good players here that a lot of people haven't heard of. But more importantly, we have a really solid locker room. And that's the thing that he's most proud of. And I remember they lost their first game to Jacksonville the year in the, you know, the first game of the year. And that was a huge upset that week one. And he called me and he was just so sick to his stomach that he felt like he really let his team down because of the way that he was calling the game in the fourth quarter, that aggressive way of calling games when he didn't have to be so aggressive against a team that obviously didn't have the same talent. And he goes, you know, I really let my guys down. And he goes, my heart is broken for them. And I said, well, just tell them that. I said, that's what they're going to want to hear. They're going to want to hear that you take ownership in a loss. And ever since that game and ever since all of the stuff that had gone on over the summer, I see now the team that Frank was talking to me about before the season even started. So it's a unique year, to say the least, with the pandemic, the social justice issues, the election, you know, all the things that they have to do in terms of protocol dealing with COVID-19. But man, he has really positioned himself as to be the real true leader of the Indianapolis Colts, and I'm very proud of him watching him do it.
Genuine humanity and genuine empathy is hard to put a price on. It sounds like. And your friend Frank Reich, there it is. Glad we went down this road, Ryan McGuffey, with Boomer Esiason. A couple more minutes here on 670 The Score. Your old team, the Bengals, with a brutal loss. Joe Burrow shares his own injury news. See you next season at the end of his tweet. We now find out today it's not just the ACL. It's not quite the Willis McGahee triple, but it is the double with the ACL and the MCL and some structural damage. That's brutal for seemingly a very good player and a good guy. You know, do we expect a full comeback with all of that in the injury soup? It seems like that might be more than a full year.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't sound as bad as Teddy Bridgewater, because it doesn't sound like a ruptured patella tendon in there. Hopefully that's not the case either. That's very difficult to come back from. But there are some other issues in there. I haven't gotten the full scoop on it. I'm not totally accurate on it. I do know it's an ACL and an MCL. What the other issues are, I'm not really sure. There could be some sort of hairline flat. I don't even want to get into it because I don't know. But I will say this. This young man would have been the rookie of the year, the offensive rookie of the year, hands down. He was having a great season. They've asked him to do so much in that city or on that team. And I know Zach Taylor is sick to his stomach. They go to Ryan Finley now, and this is going to impact the rest of the league because of who they play the rest of the way. And two teams that they play are locked in a battle for first place in their division, if you believe it or not. The Giants, who play them this week, and the Dallas Cowboys are going to play them later. So, you know, Ryan Finley is going to have an impact, most notably a negative impact on his own team and a positive impact on those teams that they're playing against. So, but as far as Joe Burrow is concerned, knowing this kid, just getting to meet him and watch him and listen to him talk, the way that he embraced the Bengal challenge and as well as he played, especially after getting beat up by Pittsburgh and Baltimore this year, showed me that he has the heart. He has the heart. And he has the poise to play. So I would expect nothing less than an offseason of rehab, working out really hard, getting that leg strong, getting it ready to go again. And then hopefully the Bengals doing whatever they can do to help support him. Now, they drafted receivers for him, and they do have young running backs, and they do have some young, really talented offensive linemen. What happened to him yesterday was really, really a shame. It's accidental. One of a player got thrown into his knee when he was prone as he was throwing. And it's just – you just hate to see it. I thought the same thing happened to Tua yesterday. When he got sacked, I'm going, oh, my God, there goes his hip again. They were saying that it was because of poor performance. I hope that's the case, and I hope that we'll see Tua this week against the Jets at the Meadowlands.
Yeah, how about that? How do you feel about benching a guy in his fourth game for performance and bringing Fitzpatrick in and then going right back to him? Can you still hold the same sway and discipline over the team if you're Brian Flores?
Yes, 100%. You know, I should have mentioned Brian Flores as a potential Coach of the Year candidate too, you know, because he made that decision because their bye got moved up because of the whole COVID situation and how they had to reconfigure the schedule because of the Tennessee Titans. So they were going to play him after the bye, I think around week 11. Their bye got moved up, and they said, you know what, let's just do it now. Let's just get it over with, and let's get him out there. Let's see what we have. And then if we can see what we have and he plays well, then we don't have to worry about a quarterback in next year's draft. And for the most part, he's played really well. I think he's done fine. He's poised. But I do think that he took a little shot and that they saw him limping, and they said, let's get him off the field. Let's protect him. Let's say that we're benching him because of ill performance. He handled it well. Ryan Fitzpatrick almost brought them back and tied the game yesterday. And then after the game, Brian Flores was certain that Tua is going to be a starter again this week against the Jets. You know, and they got a good team. Miami's got a good team, and they'll be able to support him. And, you know, obviously when you play against a Jet team that's not that good and has all these rookies in the secondary, this is the perfect type of game to get Tua back in there and hopefully get him some throws down the field and get him back into the game and get his confidence back. So I'm good with it, and I think Brian Flores is trying to get his team to the playoffs, which I appreciate.
Certainly fun to watch Burrow and Tua. I wanted to bring it back to the Bears. As the playoff picture starts to take shape and the Bears are just on the outside looking in, which kind of seems funny to say at this point, but with the way they're trending and just the misery that we've all talked about here the last few weeks, including yourself, I mean, you look at their schedule, you have the Lions, the Texans, obviously the Packers this week, but then the Vikings, the Jaguars. Is this team more trending towards what we've seen lately here as the season kind of reaches their final 6 weeks? Do you don't expect this to flip around, or do you, Boomer, from what you've seen?
Well, I mean, like, this is what I always say. It's not, you know, who you play. It's when you play them and what kind of condition are they in. So the Giants, you know, are going to go and play a Cincinnati Bengal team without Joe Burrow. That's not the same team. I mean, you know, when he went down yesterday, I think they were leading at halftime 9-7, and he had already thrown for like 190 yards in the first half. So they were well on their way to a potential upset of the Washington football team. So, you know, the Bears, I still say they have a playoff defense. So they can make any team look bad defensively, and they can score on defense, and they can score on special teams as we have seen this year. The problem for them is that they're averaging, I believe, less than 20 points in a game on the offensive side of the ball. And that's why, you know, if Matt Nagy decides, if all things are equal, guys are healthy, to go back to Mitch Trubisky to get that extra spark, to try to get that extra play, I'm all with it. I'm with whatever decision he makes. Now, it may not be the right decision, and I think a lot of people out there would say he's making a lot of wrong decisions, but he can only coach who he has. And he has two quarterbacks that are below average right now. And the guy that moves is probably the guy that's going to give him the best bet to actually extend play. So I want the guy that moves if he's healthy, and I do think – this defense can get them to 9-7, and 9-7, anything can happen.
Hey, Boomer, now to the real important stuff. Was Frank a good roommate? Was Frank Reich a good roommate? Like, did he leave laundry around on the floor? Did he leave garbage for you to take out when it was his gig? How was he?
All right, so, you know, he and I have a pact. He has more on me than I have on him, I can tell you that. No, he was a great roommate. You know, I know you guys, I think you guys were talking about an oyster shooter story that I told once, and Frank has a hard time, you know, drinking alcohol and things of that nature. I don't. As a matter of fact, I'm pretty good at it. I think I'm like a 5-star. But anyway, you know, he and I were in Annapolis with a bunch of our friends one summer, and one of our buddies said, let's do oyster shooters. And I said, sure. Frank never knew what an oyster shooter was. And I said, I love them. I'll do it. So we did an oyster shooter, and as Frank did his oyster shooter, the next thing I know, that thing was coming out of his nose. And we were at the bar. I'm like, and this, I think we were about 22 or 23. I don't know. Some stupid thing that we did back when we were kids. But I mean, I never saw him turn so red and so sick in my life. And that was probably the last shooter he's ever done in his entire life. But I gave him credit for at least trying to indulge me and dealing with my nonsense, and that's why he's the head coach and I'm the guy that's on TV.
Well, I think it's wise to go down the same story path. If he has that much on you, you don't want to unleash too much on him.
No, he's got a lot on me, I can tell you that right now. And we were best men in each other's wedding, I will say that. And I'll leave you with one other story, because I know we got to go. This is the smallest of worlds. You know, his father coached high school football on Long Island, in Long Island, New York. And his father was the last 60-minute man at Penn State. He played both sides of the football, Frank Reich Sr., and you could look him up and you could see it. So after he graduated from Penn State, he came out to Long Island, coached football at a high school called Lawrence High School. There he coached a man by the name of Sal Champy. Sal Champy went on to go play at Purdue, and he played against Butkus, who was at Illinois and everything else, and he's so proud of it. After he was done with Purdue, he came back and he coached East Islip High School on Long Island, where he became my head coach.
Wow.
So when Frank was recruited by the University of Maryland, I don't know any of this, they tell me to take him around and take him around as a big recruit out of Pennsylvania. Oh, the next big Pennsylvania quarterback's going to come to Maryland. And I take him out. And of course, you know, we have a lot of fun, and they say, what about Boomer? Is he going to be here? Nah, don't worry about it. He's going to be married. He's going to fail out of school. He's a dumbass. Don't worry about it. So Frank took them for their word. He ended up signing to come to Maryland. And then after a spring game that season, before he had enrolled at Maryland, I come out. And there's my high school coach with my father standing next to Frank Reich, who I had taken around on a visit, hugging this big, ginormous guy next to Frank. It happened to be Frank Reich Sr. They hadn't seen each other since my high school coach went away to Purdue, because when my high school coach came back in the mid-60s, Frank Reich Sr. moved away to Pennsylvania and raised Frank and his son Joe and up in Pennsylvania. So they hadn't seen each other until that day at that spring game at the University of Maryland. And that's when Frank and I realized, well, I guess we might as well be roommates together. Or your father knows my high school coach, and this is too small of a world.
Wow. That is unbelievable.
That's great stuff. Hey, Boomer, you're the best. Thank you so much,
man.
We'll talk to you next week.
All right, appreciate it, guys. I'll talk to you next week. Have a great Thanksgiving, by the way, and be safe.
You too.
You too. You too. Best to your family. Have a good, safe Thanksgiving. Boomer Esiason is the best. It is 670 The Score. It's the Parkins Show. I'm Matt Spiegel. He's Ryan McGuffey. We'll talk to Mark Grody at the top of the hour, get the latest on Eddie Jackson and the COVID test. He is now, or the COVID situation, he's on the reserve list. He has not failed a test. So that's good news in terms of him possibly being available for Sunday night's game against the Packers. Steve Ashburner from NBA.com later in the hour. When we come back up, I want to give you my favorite sports story from this weekend. My absolute favorite sports story of the weekend. That's next on The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
You're listening to 670 The Score. It's the Parkins Show. I'm Matt Spiegel. He's Ryan McGuffey. And Guff, we're going to talk to Steve Ashburner in a couple minutes about the NBA, but I wanted to make sure I got the full arc of this in. And I know you know the story, but it's my favorite one from the weekend. Undrafted out of Wichita State, Rockford's own Fred VanVleet. He was excellent. He won everywhere in high school, in college. Took a two-year deal as an undrafted free agent with Toronto, played behind Lowry and DeRozan at first. Got hot in the playoffs during their title run. Great in the finals. Great defender.
Rockford, it's for you, baby.
Yeah, man. Great defender, too. Last year, now with Kawhi Leonard gone, 17 points and 6 assists were his averages. Tied for third in steals in the NBA. That's one of the greatest seasons an undrafted free agent has ever had in the NBA. And now, over the weekend, he signed the richest contract an undrafted free agent has ever signed. So after putting all the work in for 4 years in Toronto, 4 years, $85 million for Fred VanVleet. And he's a good dude. What he does in Rockford this third straight year on Friday night, he did the Thanksgiving turkey drive at BMO Harris Bank Center there in Rockford, gave away 700 turkeys and side dishes distributed to Rockford families in need. So, I mean, what a story for a dude. And did you see what he did with the tweet, too?
I love it. That's my favorite. I was waiting to get to
tell
it.
Tell me.
My favorite
tell me.
Part.
Tell people.
He retweeted a tweet from 2016 after he signed the deal. It said, bet on yourself.
His own tweet.
His own tweet that he retweeted the other day on Saturday or Sunday. When he made it, and it was just money bags, and but which I appreciate. But if you really it's on my Twitter profile. Don't forget where you come from. Never forget where you come from. This guy embodies that, like everything about what you just said about what he does in Rockford, and then to go back and remind people like, hey, I knew it was going to be okay. He knew it was going to be okay from the moment he went undrafted. It's amazing. It's a lovely story.
Good for him. Good for Fred VanVleet. He's a hell of a player. All right, we'll talk more NBA, crazy Gordon Hayward stuff, LeBron team building, and more with Steve Ashburner from NBA.com. Mark Grody on the Bears at the top of the hour right here on 670 The Score.
The second round pick was Marko Simonovic, who is a Montenegrin player who plays in Serbia. And it was kind of funny. I just following it on Twitter, people were Googling and they were coming up with a different player and they didn't know who you had picked.
That was hilarious.
That is Arturis Karnišovas with our Mully and Haw in the morning right here on 670 The Score. No, that's not who the Bulls drafted. Now, the Bulls signed Garrett Temple over the weekend. Ryan McGuffey, it's me, Matt Spiegel, and Ryan McGuffey in for the Parkins show this afternoon. But that was not the headline moves out there in NBA free agency. Let's talk about the ones that were with our friend Steve Ashburner from NBA.com, who joins us right now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Hello, Steve Ashburner. How you been?
Steve? I'm good, gentlemen. Thanks for having me on. And by the way, I haven't forgotten where I'm from. I'm from Brookfield. So,
beautiful.
You know, you're never going to accuse me of that.
I love it. I love everything. Portage, Indiana, damn it. Let's get a plug.
There you go.
Lawrenceville, New Jersey. But, you know, nobody asked. Although I guess the ask was there, sort of inherent. What do you make of this, the insanity, the busyness of this? First off, I think almost 90 moves, I believe, Steve, in a market that a lot of people expected to be slumping because of COVID and uncertainty and can they play without a bubble and all that. It was instead incredibly active and still is. What do we make of that?
Well, you know what? I'm going to attribute some of this to the virus and the shutdowns, because just like a lot of us are waiting for a green light or a green flag to sort of go crazy and do some of the things we used to do. Maybe we'll over-travel or, you know, go to a few too many bars or whatever it is. I think there's a lot of that pent-up feeling across the board. And once the NBA announced that it was going to set the salary cap and luxury tax numbers, it wasn't going to calculate them based on, you know, this past season's income, you know, revenues down, obviously, from the hit that they took. Once those numbers were just set arbitrarily, you gave people money to spend, and by God, they're going to get out and spend it. Not always wisely, but I just think there's been this sort of pent-up demand to get back to business as usual, and it's a long time since the previous offseason. So, you know, there's sort of been that feeling like, you know, we wanted to improve our team this way, and by God, we're going to try.
Steve, free agency is such a huge deal in every sport. There's this anticipation that fans feel with it. Pandemic be damned, though, the NBA just always seems to make the right move and get it right. Why? Why is the NBA always kind of pushing the right button to make sure free agency is an event?
Yeah, I know. It's been a few years, but, you know, I've told Adam Silver directly that, you know, he and his league have mastered the art of dominating a 13-month calendar. I mean, the NBA is always in the headlines one way or the other, it seems. I mean, this month and next month, you know, well, next month will change with camps opening. But, I mean, sort of the second half of October and this month, been very weird not to have NBA basketball. Same with NHL hockey. You know, and I think that stings a bit when they, you know, they had to make the trade-off and they ended up finishing out through the summer, and that was sort of, I don't know, it was okay. It was perfunctory, but it wasn't their ideal time to display their product. And now here they sit in November with only the once-a-week NFL, and you know, this feels like an opportunity lost. I think that contributed to the desire to get going again. I'm not sure what it is. I'm not going to say they're smarter than anybody else. I think the one thing I do think that makes a difference compared to the NFL and particularly baseball is they have really, whether it's largely perception or somewhat perception, they have really hammered home the idea of partnership between the players' union and management. I mean, it's essentially a 50-50 deal. And so I think it's been absorbed on both sides that, hey, what's good for the league is good for each of us, and what's bad for the league, likewise. And I think that is more embraced than that sense of shared destiny that you get in the NFL or in baseball. And so I think that they've been able to come to agreements more nimbly in many cases.
I wasn't there on the Twitters in real time for Dwight Howard embarrassing himself. I always love that. It's too bad I missed that. The flaky charlatan, as I called him a long, long time ago. But anyway, the Lakers and LeBron turn Howard, Rondo, Danny Green, and JaVale McGee into Dennis Schroeder, Wesley Matthews, Montrezl Harrell, and Marc Gasol. I mean, is that upgrade 4 for 4 there? And I think Gasol and LeBron are going to be beautiful passing together.
Yeah, it's a great point. I mean, and what's expected of Marc Gasol with the Lakers different from, how he was seen or how he fit, you know, even last season with Toronto. I mean, I think we watched him last year. I love Marc Gasol as a guy, and he is a deft passer and a good defender. You don't look for him for major points production, but you know, as you're right. I mean, being able to move the ball, which is so important to the Lakers. You know, they could probably use another big body just because Anthony Davis, you know, prefers not to be cast as a center, and I think Gasol is a limited minutes guy. But I agree. I mean, they've helped themselves immensely, and if you didn't like the Los Angeles Lakers just because of their dominance, you know, through the NBA history, or if you don't particularly like them since LeBron James signed on with them, you're going to have a tough season coming up because I think the Lakers are going to be heavy favorites more so than they were this past season. And I don't see anybody on paper that has a better roster.
You mentioned some bad money that teams spend earlier in the call, and Gordon Hayward gets 4 for $120 from Charlotte. He's made $228 million. Over his last two contracts. Not his fault, but is that the type of player Gordon Hayward is heading to Charlotte and Michael Jordan's beloved franchise?
Yeah, well, they tried to get him once before, right? As a free agent, a restricted free agent, and then Utah matched it. And so maybe they're a little bit obsessed and, determined that we're going to sign our man. It's an overpay, in my opinion. I know there's been some arguing that, look, they need to be legitimized. They bring in LaMelo Ball, who's, you know, sort of this raw, fresh, in search of some NBA stability, kind of a locker room and on the court, accompaniment. And so Gordon Hayward can be that guy. To me, that's a reach. I mean, that's a ton of money. I don't know how he can possibly play his way up to that, but you know, in Charlotte, they got different standards. As long as he's like double the player Nick Batum has been, I think people will be pleased because he's been the can that gets kicked constantly in Charlotte. So no, it was an overpay. Michael as a player, I think he's beyond reproach. Michael as an owner, there's some things you can nitpick.
Plenty of reproach for Michael. Yeah. These three guys are now officially max players. Donovan Mitchell, Jason Tatum, De'Aaron Fox. Are all three of them deserving max contract players?
You know, I mean, I'm sort of like one of those old cranks who says that there should be a Hall of Fame within a Hall of Fame, you know, because there should really be the elite, the Mount Rushmore guys from each team, and that ought to be. And I feel the same way about max salaries. I mean, as soon as they put that in, and I was, you know, I was around back when they instituted that that mechanism back in '99, and it's sort of like everybody's going to define themselves as a max player. They all think that they should be earning the max, and you're going to have this inflation right up to the ceiling. And so, no, I don't think, frankly, any of them is a max player at this stage of his career. Least of all, De'Aaron Fox, because there's been no winning associated with that. At least, you know, we saw Donovan Mitchell in the playoffs. We saw Jason Tatum in the playoffs. But, I think it's too much too soon. But they got to spend the money on somebody. There is a floor below which they cannot have a team payroll. And if your team is based on young talent, as Boston's is, or if you're really, you know, let's face it, I mean, the team in Salt Lake City is going to have to overpay for its best players because you want to show you can keep guys. You want to potentially attract somebody that might want to come out there and play with him. So it's not a destination market. So they probably overpaid. The Sacramento thing with De'Aaron Fox, I just think, I mean, that's too big a leap. But who are you going to pay on the Sacramento Kings roster?
We knew the Bulls weren't going to be one of the active teams in free agency for multiple reasons. But I want to ask you a question just about the perception of the Bulls now around the league at this point. now they have, now that Garpax is gone and the coaching staff has been completely turned over and legitimized with Billy Donovan, how are people looking at the Bulls present day and going forward when we talk about free agency in the future?
Well, going forward, I mean, they have the potential to have a better reputation and a more appealing image as far as players coming here. I think that, I mean, nobody quibbles with the city. I mean, NBA players love Chicago. They love visiting. They love being here when they're here. But it has been known as a top-heavy and top-down management style, not a player place. You can debate what player friendly means, but it's certainly not player catering, and it has not been that here. I mean, I remember when I was in Minnesota, Kevin Garnett was there, and he was already hearing from Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen that, you know, cross Chicago off your list. They don't you know, treat the players the way we think they should treat them. Yeah, you have an opportunity, but Billy Donovan, you know, he's a known coach. He's a name guy. I mean, Jim Boylan was going to be a tough sell reputationally, great career assistant who, you know, just was not able to prove himself as a head coach here. You know, you have the new brain trust with Gar and Paxson gone, and with Arturas in place. I get the honeymoon sort of feeling that you know, I sense in the local media, because he hasn't lost any games, his teams, but they haven't won any either. And so I think there's a lot of, you know, you got to show us. And maybe that can, you know, if they get some traction this year, that'd be great. Billy Donovan, he's had good players. And I think probably that's how players look at Billy Donovan as an NBA head coach. He's had Durant and Westbrook, and he had, you know, Harden was there for a while. I don't think he was there with Billy Donovan. But, you know, he's had good players. And so how much would that be an attraction for, say, a free agent? That's the big hurdle, I think, for this franchise, is if they can become the kind of team where a top free agent will sign. I don't mean Anthony Davis when he's 36 years old, and I don't mean, you know, fringe guys who you basically are overpaying for the level of player they are. So, you know, we'll see. Now, you know, there's a feeling I sense for this NBA season as sort of a, let's get going and let's get it over with, because they know they're going to take all sorts of revenue hits still, right? You're not going to have fans in the building initially. Who knows what the ratings are going to be after the slump from last summer and fall. You know, so it's almost like, let's get this one in. We can get back on schedule. 21-22 is when we expect to fully spring back. And I almost think the Bulls, you know, need to approach this season the same way. Their roster suggests that's how they're going to do it. I mean, you've got 1-year contracts. You're going more or less with the same roster that you had last season. And I mean, I kind of like that. You know, I don't know. There's something called the IROC car racing series, where the philosophy behind it was, we're going to give all these drivers the exact same car, tuned, you know, whatever. And then we're going to see who the best drivers are. And I almost feel like that's how I want to judge Bulls management. It's like, come back with the exact same. Now, obviously, everybody gets a year older, and presumably they've developed their games a little bit during this time. But I want to see what these guys, the new management, can do with essentially the pieces that were in place from last season.
It makes all the sense in the world, Ash. And I think from their perspective, they might want to see that too. What do we actually have in Lauri Markkanen? When Boylan didn't know how to use him. What, you know, what do we actually have in even Denzel Valentine, who they're bringing back? He's got some skills that might work. Let's see what we can actually do with some people who know what they're doing. Steve, you're the best. From Brookfield to Marquette to NBA.com. No stops in between, I don't think. I don't think I missed anything.
Many stops, you know. Ask Casey Johnson about Beloit.
Another time, we will. We'll get all of you guys on.
Right,
thank
guys.
You, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
You're the best.
You're welcome.
All right. That's Steve Ashburner. I could talk to him for hours and hours from NBA.com. No, that makes sense, right? And,
yeah.
And it looks like what the Bulls are doing. You know, they got most of the guys there. And like, all right, let's see what the rookies can do. Let's see what a good coach does with certain pieces and run this thing back. I love that image of like, all right, let's just get in and then get out with this NBA season, all of us.
But that's what you want this Bulls management to do, though. You want them to, rather than assess from what they saw in Denver, you've been in the building now, and with the pandemic still ongoing, get this team at least under your wing, under your management, under your era,
yeah.
And then have a better feel for it in a year when it's time to actually strike again, when you know life is back to normal. I think that makes too much sense.
Kind of makes me think about how I wish Theo Epstein actually took a look at DJ LeMahieu before trading him away. You know, you never know. You never know who you got.
There's a few that hurt. That one certainly. That's a tough one.
I don't know. Ian Stewart still might pan out. Give it some time. It's the Parkins Show, 670 The Score. Matt Spiegel and Ryan McGuffey here with you. Let's check in with Mark Grody about Eddie Jackson on the COVID list and the latest, as far as we can tell, on the quarterback situation for the beloved. We're not active, but remain, unfortunately, present in our hearts and minds a little bit. Right here on 670 The Score.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.